C1AN. Number 2A.
Now, we would think that at that point where Mrs. Eddy discovered Christian Science and where she was leaving behind all those false concepts, be it mesmerism or hypnotism or any other sense of so-called mind cure, which were materialistic in its essence, one would think that having left animal magnetism behind, that she would be free from it, and that that would have been a question which would have been settled once for all. But she suddenly found herself right up against animal magnetism. And that's the point and the subject which we have to consider in our life too, that we may be interested in the first four chapters of the textbook which lead us and show us the way to the one mind and one spirit and one soul and principle and life and truth and love, to the one God. And then we must ask ourselves, but does that understanding of God include an understanding of the nothingness of everything besides that God? If it doesn't include a clear, sober, fearless understanding that anything next to God has no power, well, if we don't see that, then we are subject to animal magnetism. And that's what Mrs. Eddy had to discover after her discovery that all is mind. She had to discover, she had to make a second discovery, namely that she had to know why animal magnetism is nothing. And we have seen that under animal magnetism we can understand any belief, be it a mesmeric belief, be it an hypnotic belief, be it an animal belief, be it a belief in sickness or a belief in health, that any belief has no power. To that standpoint we have to advance. Because in our everyday life we seem to be under the influence of so-called other powers. No one of us can deny that. That somehow we still experience that we are under the influence of the weather and of the political climate and of sickness and of weakness and of sleepiness, and under the influence of other people, and so on, and so on, and so on. We just can't deny that. Well, that's animal magnetism. It's the belief in one or the other form, no matter if it's of the form of mesmer, or if it is the form of hypnotism, or the form of Quimby, or whatever it was. Somehow, there is still something there in us which believes in the influence of something next to God. And as long as we have that belief, we are mesmerized or animal magnetized, or whatever we may call it. And the fifth subject in the textbook is therefore that necessary subject which comes in and now says, standpoint which you have won through the first four chapters is a standpoint which you can no more leave and should no more leave, and which should be your only guide but also your only influence and power. The only thing to which we refer and under the control of which we put ourselves. Because any other control except the control of God is animal magnetism. Be it the control of somebody else or of a psychological attitude which we have, or of a psychological belief, or of anything, it is a false control. So, this fifth chapter in the textbook is, so to say, that chapter which should safeguard all that what we have learned and made our own through the first four chapters. The fifth comes and should give us the protection that no other standpoint except that which through the first four chapters has been shown is the only standpoint and is accepted as the only standpoint and is taken and remains the only standpoint. But while I was studying and pondering those few pages of this chapter, it is the smallest chapter in the textbook, only 7 pages, I didn't feel very satisfied, and I didn't know why. I always felt that something is lacking in my thought, because I seemed not to find all the answers in that textbook which usually we should have when we consider what through the last 20 or 30 years we have heard in the church or in the Christian Science organization about animal magnetism, malpractice, malicious animal magnetism, and so on. I thought that many of these vital questions were not answered sufficiently or elaborated sufficiently in that chapter, Animal Magnetism Uncovered. And so I felt that something is lacking in my thought, and somehow I began to trace that subject, that chapter, through all the old editions of Science and Health. I have more or less all the main revisions of Science and Health, and I began with the first, second, and so on, and tried to see how that whole subject of animal magnetism developed in Mrs. Eddy's thought, and hoped to find that way a key, a clue, to the present chapter of animal magnetism. And I think I have found something. I think I have found something which is fine. But I know perhaps the resistance one has if one goes back to the old edition, because Mrs. Eddy says that only the final edition should be that edition which is our textbook and which really gives the pure and final text. Yes, but we have to see the difference between the final text as a textbook and the history of the textbook. These are two very different things. And in a journal in 1891, when Mrs. Eddy had the new edition of Science and Health, the 50th edition, which was quite a big revision, there was an article in the Christian Science Journal in which, among others, is written, "Fortunate is he who has all former revisions, together with the original edition of 1875. They are indicators of successive stages of growth in Christian Science." See, so if I go today through the older edition, let's see that I only go through them in order to show the successive stages in the growth of Christian Science. But these successive stages in the growth of the chapter on animal magnetism open up quite a few, give us quite a few answers to pertinent questions. And as such, at some future day, will possess historic value. Keep them all. They will prove a treasure trove. Yes, they have done so. Again, let the new volume be studied in connection with earlier editions. This is even in italics. The very contrasts help to see, the very contrasts help to see how the thoughts have risen only as we have been able to receive them. So really what I will try to show is what each new edition, by contrast, has brought out as a new standpoint and as a new subject. This again will reveal why the new edition could now be written for us. It is simply because the advancing thought or demonstration of Christian students has ascended to that plane which makes it both possible and practical for us to have the new work. So she says, it's said here that as we go through these progressive stages of the editions, that we can only go through them and that they were only being written at that time because the thought was ready for a new step. And we'll see how Mrs. Eddy handles the question of animal magnetism in each edition from a very different standpoint. And tomorrow we'll see that the chapter as it stands today summarizes all those those standpoints, but always from the latest and highest point of view of truth and love. So here I want to start and show you what these revisions have, what they contain. Let me first take the first edition, and I go quickly through the main subjects of that first revision, and you will see that the very first edition of Science and Health had just one big object in dealing with animal magnetism, namely to investigate it. The necessity of investigation, observation, the necessity of knowing are all about animal magnetism. That is the subject that goes right through that first edition. In the first edition, by the way, she didn't have a separate chapter, animal magnetism. But it was incorporated in the chapter, healing the sick. Right at the beginning of healing the sick, she brings in these passages. And you remember that Mrs. Eddy writes in retrospection relative to the printing of the first edition how the printer stopped his work without a specific reason until Mrs. Eddy decided to incorporate her observations of mental malpractice in the manuscript. She writes, "Accordingly, I set at work, contrary to my inclination, to fulfill this painful task and finish my copy for this book. At that very moment, the printer resumed his work." And in the first edition, she writes about it, she said, "We thank wisdom that revealed this great error to us before these pages went to press, that the years we have labored to bless our fellow beings be not wholly lost through this trespass upon the blessing of mental healing." And when she refers to this point where she says that wisdom had forced her to write on this subject, she writes in miscellaneous writings, "I shall not forget the cost of investigating for this age, the method and power of error. While the ways, means, and potency of truth had flowed into my consciousness as easily as dawns the morning light and shadows flee, the metaphysical mystery of error, its hidden path, purpose, and fruits at first defied me. I was saying all the time, 'Come not thou into the secret,' but at length took up the research according to God's command." So we see here already when she introduces the whole subject in the first edition how great stress lays on the fact that we have to investigate evil and the working of evil and not to close our eyes to it. She begins her expositions by saying how she was first unaware of animal magnetism, that she experienced the fact that uncovering error and wanting to help other people, that responded in many cases by turning the lie on her. And then she said at first she was amazed at this reaction. She was taken by surprise, just as we are. Just as we are always taken by surprise by animal magnetism if we are not awake and investigate the nature of animal magnetism. And so she says that teaching is more difficult the task than healing. And in that edition she gives the reason why. She says, well, the sick is usually willing to part with error, but that those in health are oft-times unwilling to change masters and to avoid contact with certain minds that hinder their advancement. So healing in science, she goes on, has its reward even here, but the task of teaching this science earns blame and scorn and victory only in the far-off years. So she began to see, really, that as long as the patient is willing to accept truth because he is in need of it, that is easier than to bring somebody who is healthy out of his false views and false opinions and to bring him into the light of metaphysics. She asks herself, what is it then that makes us lose the scientific healing? And she says, well, we lose it through falsehood, dishonesty, and sensuality. Gives here a tone that goes through all the later editions. And so she says, we can only reinstate ourselves to the right practice by repentance, reformation, restitution. See those qualities which we have in the chapter on prayer. Then she goes on and shows how unaware she was of the mental method of malpractice. She says, she knew no opposite chance for doing evil through a mental method of healing until she saw it traduced by an erring student and discovered how malpractice held sway over the patient's mind. See, that was a discovery in 1975, 9 years later, 1879. See, 9 years later after her discovery. And so she said, mesmerism is a mental method of healing whereby the minds of the sick may be controlled with error instead of truth. And she reasoned it out like this. She says, if the practitioner can change the patient's belief with regard to their disease, he can change also their belief relative to an individual or any other subject. That was her discovery, of which she said she was never thinking of it and never dreamt that it would be done and would be possible. But when it was done, she naturally could see that if the practitioner believed that he could change sickness into health by changing the patient's belief, then that practitioner could also think, I can also change the belief of anyone in regard to any other body or to any other subject. And so introduces then really malicious animal magnetism. But at this point she just was discovering that it is possible. That was the first thing. Just realizing that it is possible, that if we are not awake and don't see clearly the allness of mind and the all power of mind, that then animal magnetism can play its trick on us. She goes on and asks herself, how shall the mind of the practitioner then be governed? because she could see that she told that mind is the medicine. At that time she wrote mind always with a small m. She hadn't yet the capitalized mind. So at that point, you see, she taught that the practitioner's mind was the medicine in healing. And so naturally she concluded that dishonesty, revenge, falsehood, or impurity could be the stronger ingredient or quality of the practitioner's mind. She suddenly saw that behind mind, always a small m, that behind that mind of the practitioner could lay a whole realm of animality. A whole realm of animality. Dishonesty, revenge, falsehood, impurity, and so on. And so she said that thing worse than poisonous drugs is the mental evil imparted through inoculation of mind. One can just see at this point of her spiritual development how she herself was so pure when she discovered Christian Science that she would have never thought that one could impart anything else but good. She was so happy about her discovery, so hopeful about the discovery, that she was never dreaming that one could impart through that mind something evil. And so the first big point in handling animal magnetism is to realize that. So she began to see that malpractice, as she says, can be used as a weapon of revenge. By imparting one's own likes and dislikes on the patients, Josie calls malpractice mesmerism demoralized. Not just mesmerism, like Quimby used to practice it. She said Quimby was a good man. He was a lord to himself. But when it is demoralized, then we should call it malpractice. She writes, controlled by his will, patients haste to do his bidding and become involuntary agents of his schemes, while honestly attesting that their faith in him and his... Oh, sorry, I must read it again. She writes, controlled by his will, the practitioner's will, patients haste to do his bidding and become involuntary agents of his schemes, while honestly attesting their faith in him and his moral character. See, the subject is not aware of what has been going on. At that time, she discovered it because a student was malpracticing, it was Kennedy, and he did it through manipulation, through rubbing the head. And she believed at that time that is the way that evil can be imparted. So naturally she asked herself, well, how can I protect my students from malpractice? And so she gives quite a few advices, but they all have one common denominator, namely that students should be informed of animal magnetism. You see again the tone of mind, of knowing, of investigation, of learning, of... She said, the protection is not so much by preventing the malpractitioner from his practice. She said, that is not the means to do it, to prevent the malpractitioner from his practice. But by opening the eyes of the community to its secret working, believed in opening the eyes, you see, in knowledge, in wisdom, that the individual and the community must have the courage to see through this evil and not just close their eyes to it for peace's sake. Mrs. Eddy makes it plain that one has not the authority to control the mind of the malpractitioner, but that one had to instruct the public and to trust its reason to defend itself against mesmerism. Naturally, Mrs. Eddy was asked that she would treat the malpractitioner so that the malpractitioner could no more malpractice. And she said, no, that's not the method. I have no right to trespass on anybody's mind. But what is necessary is that our protection lies in this, that we begin to see that there is such a thing at work which is called animal magnetism, and that our protection lies in it, to see through it and to trust our reason in this work. She says, mesmerism is always evil, while science is good. And perhaps this is very nice. She ends the chapter of that passage and says, mesmeric power is stronger for evil than for good, in contradistinction to the enlargement of the intellectual, moral, and spiritual being that science imparts to individuals, elevating the capacity to do good above others. So that's, you see, the substance of what she has been writing on animal magnetism. And if we already know a little bit of the present chapter, we see that there is practically nothing common in the first edition compared with the final edition. Practically nothing. Yet one thing is in it, and that is that she says that subject of animal magnetism must be uncovered. In order to uncover it, we must open our eyes to it, we must observe the workings of it, investigate it, know how it works, and in knowing is our only protection against it.